This is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website, mbeinstitute.org. The Institute was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright. There are over 400 extemporaneous prayer treatments on the website. Probably between them cover any topic that one would be interested in pursuing. If not, you're welcome to contact us and make a suggestion. And if it's a topic we have not already covered, we will be happy to prepare a prayer treatment and provide it. The contact form gives you the procedure and how you can make easy contact with us. The contact system is encrypted and totally private. That, unfortunately, is required in today's age because either governments or government agencies or rogue people within the government try to eliminate the liberty and privacy of the citizens that pay the taxes which pay for their employment. The system that we utilize is very easy to set up if you don't already have it set up on the device you want to use to contact us. It can be done within a couple of minutes. Then you can communicate with us anytime in written or verbal format, including direct one-on-one conversations. Also, if anyone has any questions about this or any other of the 400-plus prayer treatments, or anything about Christian Science, or the Bible, or Mary Baker Eddy's writings, or the writings of any of the other authors, we have over 100 on the website, please feel free to contact us. We give personal, direct service to everyone that is an interested student or inquiry regarding any of these topics. 0 to 7. MIST, M-I-S-T, is missing the truth. 0 to 7 refers to from beginning to end, 0 beginning, and end being the 7th synonymous term for God. There are 7 of them in total: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And if 2 or more are discussed, then that is included as being God for simplicity purposes, as opposed to listing every possible combination, which would be a very large number. The effort is to cover all synonymous terms and a variety of combinations that may be appropriate for the topic. This being an extemporaneous prayer treatment, we have no idea what will be discussed, because as the thought occurs to us, as we listen, as we talk, then the thought is shared. The idea for this topic occurred yesterday as a discussion of Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2 came to the surface when it was emphasizing how important it is to understand the derivation of the word for God. In Genesis 1, which is truly recognized as the spiritual record, utilizes the original word for God as Elohim. In Genesis 2, which is the material, so-called fake record, utilizes other terms for God. And throughout the Bible, if the word Elohim is the root word that is translated into English as God, then you can be assured that that is from a document that is talking about the one and only real God, which is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and also incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, all-substance, all-intelligence, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, omni-action, omni-wisdom, the only substance, the only true identity, the only real mind, the only real principle, the only real life, and real truth, and real love. These definitions, which were parsed out into individual key words, are stated in the textbook. The definitions that we usually have come to us when a prayer treatment is in process are definitions that are also stated on the home page of the website, mbeinstitute.org. These definitions are a foundation for any kind of prayer with any kind of topic, and therefore, for your convenience, there are numerous ones on the home page. And these quote primarily from Chapter 14 of the textbook, which is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, and her other writings. And within the textbook, there specifically, in addition to Chapter 14, which is a summary entitled Recapitulation of Chapters 1 through 13, also from Chapter 17, which is part of the Key to the Scriptures, and that's entitled The Glossary. The glossary includes many biblical characters and their spiritual, or rather the opposite of that, of what their character seems to be a symbol of. You may find it very rewarding to get a better understanding of exactly what these individual characters represent as portrayed by their character in symbolism. Everyone that is in the form of a so-called material body is constantly faced with the Adam dream. And the Adam dream states that the mother and father, Adam and Eve, were sinners. And therefore, the progenies will be born a sinner. Even though one is totally innocent of that claim by any thought, speech, or actions that the little babe was involved in. For it is assigned at birth, if not before. Assigned by universal belief, which has been erroneously influenced since the biblical times or before, in which the story of Adam and Eve is covered in the Bible. The first record ends with verse 3 of chapter 2 of Genesis, and verse 4 forward is about the erroneous record, which is after there's a mist. The very first activity is a mist went up, M-I-S-T, and that's what inspired this title for this prayer treatment. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics. And the system, by her own words, is a reduction to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its application to the cure of disease. And another statement she makes, which is directly linked to this, states, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Now notice she says, is reduced. She refers to the 32 planks of the platform is understood. So she's talking one subject, even though both of them are plural words. Metaphysics and planks. Think of a platform that has 32 boards, and if one is missing, one could fall through the crack, the missing board, depending on how wide they are, and it wouldn't be complete. So our platform wouldn't be a solid, complete foundation if there were any more boards or planks missing from it. If one contemplates what has just been recited regarding the system of divine metaphysics, one can realize that anyone who understands the system and lives it can heal any problem that occurs. And we have a button on the website in the menu at the top of the homepage and in the footer under its present design that is entitled Heal Anything. And we give you a step-by-step process that is backed up by 486 healings in the last 101 pages of the textbook, that it's effective. And we've made the system even more effective because of present technology, which enables us to use more senses than what Mary Baker Eddy was able to utilize with ease back in the day that she wrote the textbook. For example, we have recording devices and playback functions, and it's been proven that if one utilizes those functions and that kind of a device, that their memory is improved significantly on what they have read. Devices also make it very easy to have a numbered checklist and update and rearrange it easily with computers and software that's available and cell phones. One can read the original text and record it and listen to it. They can think about it and then do the same thing in their own words. In other words, record it, listen to it, think about it again. Then we are really embedding it in thought because we're using the talking facility, the seeing ability, the listening ability. When we contemplate, we're using the feeling ability, tasting ability, and even the smell. Does this smell right? Does this seem to be what is really being conveyed in the original text? And it's highly recommended that every word that is not absolutely known, and many words that we think we know, we really don't know, be researched and do a word study and make sure they are getting the possible meaning that could best fit how it is applied in the exact sentence that they are reading. We can get the answer on that instantly. Whereas back in the old days, you had to open up and locate in a large printed book the particular word that you had in mind. And maybe you had to look at several dictionaries. Now, with the website onelook.com, you can see many dictionaries and compare the definitions and the pronunciation. We recommend the Noah Webster 1828 for the American English language because he was a very spiritual man, and that is considered the Bible of dictionaries for the English language. He even translated the complete Bible. I believe it was 15 or 20 languages that he learned in order to provide the dictionary to the world. Imagine that as a task, without any printing press, with only books, and without the advanced technological tools that are common day conveniences. So what does Genesis 1 say about man? In verse 26, chapter 1, "And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them." And then in verse 31, "And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day." So God created everything else. And then his final activity was creating man. Because what did he do with man? He gave man dominion over everything that he had created. So he had to create it first, and then gave man dominion over the whole existence. Now, how could man do anything with it? Because God is omni-intelligent, omni-wise, and omni-knowing. God is all power, all science, all present, all action. God is all creative ability, capacity, capability, functionality, facility, performance. God is the only substance because God is spirit. And spirit is flawless because it contains no belief of matter. And how about soul? Soul is the identifying facility that man is given, which are called the functions of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. And since spirit is the only substance, and spirit is flawless, and transparent, and reflective, then our seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste is flawless, transparent, and reflective. Therefore, we can identify principle. Principle is structure. Structure is always in balance, always harmonious. And the structure includes a system which is created by mind, the facility of mental capacity of God, and that then enables us to have a basis for life, because life is exercising all the qualities of God. So we have the mental capacity, we have the substance, we have the function of identifying, and we have the structure that includes a system. So we can then be living all of those qualities. And what do we get as a result? The truth. the truth about everything. We have to discover it by living. We have to live by identifying. We have to identify by knowing that every one of our facilities is spiritual, not material. And we know that because mind is all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. In other words, the faculties and facility of mind let us utilize in the most productive, spiritual, pure, flawless ways all of the rest of the qualities of all the rest of the synonymous terms and their functions. So if we've done that all and we realize that, oh, now we understand what truth is, then we can appreciate what love is, because love is the consolidation of everything that we've already experienced. And it gives us a direct purpose in nurturing each of those qualities to bring them to their wholeness. And that's exactly what love is. It's the completeness, the wholeness of everything else. We cannot truly love until we understand what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth represent. And we can only do that if we are living them and testing them and realizing what the result is, compared to anything else or any other method or any other thought process. Nothing compares, because God has no competition or opposition. Why? Because God is the only. God is omni, which means one only in all. So there is no competition or opposition, because God is the only reality. And since God is omnipresent, where is anything else going to be? There is no ignorance, because everything is knowing. Everything is already known. Mary Baker Eddy translates the first three words of Genesis 1, where it says, in the beginning, to mean in the only. The Bible tells us why. It tells us all about truth. In the textbook, which is the name for Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, it has three introductory quotes. The very first quote is about truth, the words of Jesus. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Free of what? Free of anything that is not true. Free of ignorance. Free of not being able to discern between right and wrong, mortal mind and divine mind, the substance of spirit versus matter, material sense instead of spiritual sense for soul, a structure that is flawed and chaotic, out of balance, discordant, versus the truth, that principle is always in balance and always structured, always harmonious, and it operates according to the system that has been provided by mind. And it tells us the difference between a spiritual life and a material life, which is a life that ends in death. Truth has no beginning and no end. Our life is a demonstration of truth, so there can be no beginning and no end. What appeared as a material sense of birth is a false representation of life that has always been in existence. Truth is the truth about everything, and it represents consciousness. God is the only real consciousness, and therefore we are always conscious of truth. But we cannot get anywhere with anything if we're not taking advantage of the symbolism of love, spiritual love, which is the opposite of material, sensual love. Spiritual love is permanent, benefits everyone continuously because it's wholeness, completeness, a full representation of God. So we know truth is not temporary. Truth always has been true. Therefore, can there be any real creation? No. That's why Mary Baker Eddy translates those first three words as being in the only instead of in the beginning. Because there never was a beginning of truth. It's like a circle. No beginning and no end. But it's a circle without limits. It's a circle that is infinite. From the center to the circumference, it is infinite. No limit, no finiteness. Mary Baker Eddy said, infinite progression is concrete being. So we will get a better concept of life, which is being, if we are constantly striving for progress, for spiritual progress, learning about God, and that God can only be God if God has a manifestation. Otherwise, what is God a God of? And a manifestation is required to have a cause, because it's a manifestation of the source, the cause. So the source and manifestation are connected without any possibility of ever being separated. And that's one of the first things that we need to learn. Whenever there's a temptation to have a suggestion of evil be real, we have to understand that we cannot be separated from God. We don't have any vision except the vision of God. We don't have any hearing, taste, feel, smell, except from God. Because that's the only existence there is. We have no choice. We can trick ourselves and think that we don't need God, then we're operating in a realm of nothingness, fantasy, complete emptiness, a vacuum. And there is no vacuum in omnipresence. So we're out there all by ourselves. No truth. Only error and mistakes. No life. Only a so-called fake birth, a fake growth, and a fake death. No principle. Because there's no structure, only chaos. No life. No truth. Because what's always been true is only reality. It's not in unreality. A lie is what is unreality. And Mary Baker Eddy states that a lie and the liar are the same, because they have no foundation. It's only a unbelievable fake. And love is the lubricant that has everything working smoothly together. No friction. No friction with an infinite lubricant, which is spiritual inspiration. We cannot miss the truth, which is the title to this prayer treatment, if we do not look through the lens of matter for our seeing, but instead look through the lens of spirit, which is flawless, which is the substance provided by God for us to reflect. The Indians had a beautiful lake, perfectly clear water, crystal clear, beautiful landscape all around the lake, beautiful sky, lovely clouds, lovely formations, lovely color. They called it the smile of the Great Spirit. They didn't see anything that was material. They saw the purity of spirit, the flawless nature of God. What do we see? What did Jesus see? If there was someone that was blind, deaf, dumb, leprous, sick, sinful, diseased, didn't matter. He saw one thing. He saw the image and likeness of God. Einstein tells us that we cannot solve a problem if we approach it at the same level as where the problem appeared. Did Jesus see the individual on the same level that everyone else did? Even his disciples, in their naivety, asked him when he was confronted with a blind man, who did sin? Blind man from his birth. He said, who did sin? This one or his parents? Jesus said, neither. And the only reason for us to be having this experience with this individual is to glorify God. That is the only purpose, to glorify God, to prove to everyone the nothingness of defects at birth or any other time, and the superiority of perfection, the permanence with that had no birth because it was always true. And from time to time, Jesus would ask the individual that was he was confronted with, do you believe you can be healed? Remember what verse 26 says of Genesis? And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let us. Are we letting our consciousness be open to the truth that is given to us in seven ways from Sunday in the Bible and in Mary Baker Eddy's writings and in all the 486 healings that are in the last 101 pages of the textbook? And all the thousands and millions of healings throughout the world from Christian Scientists. And they've testified to many of them in the Wednesday evening meetings of the churches all over the world. Millions. And just think of how many healings where people did not stand up in a Wednesday evening service and share their healing. Whether they felt it was too personal, maybe they were not feeling comfortable about speaking in public. Who knows what the reason could be. We have a choice on how we think. The second quote at the beginning of the textbook is from Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Jesus didn't think that the man was blind. That would be thinking bad. The disciples were not thinking good either. They said, who did sin? This man or his parents? Well, you know that Jesus made 11 bad mistakes out of 12 disciples that he chose. He was working out the fact that he had been born by a so-called human woman. He didn't have to worry about not being born by a, by being born by a human man joining with a human woman. He didn't have that to overcome, but he had the belief that he was in gestation for 9 months and born by Mary. And he went through 30 years of being a baby and through his youthhood until he came of age, according to the custom at that time of 30 years, where he can then totally be on his own. He had a choice of how he was going to think about Lazarus, Tabitha. He said they sleep. He didn't say they were dead. What do you think he thought about the lepers? Anything else that he healed? Everyone thinks they were miracles. Mary Baker Eddy has proven that they are not miracles at all, but they are science that was in action. And what was the science all about? What was the root of the science? What is the symbol out of all the qualities that one can think of that both Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy followed to a T? They had lives that were very similar. Both of them were failures at picking out their staff. Jesus only had one out of 12, and he went through a lot of trials. He went to sleep when Jesus asked him to stay awake and guard over the world. He went to sleep just like Peter and John did. Peter and James, I mean. Jesus said, "Now watch while I'm gone." And he came back. "Can you not watch for me 1 hour?" Because they were all asleep. All three of them were asleep. John realized the mistake he made, and he later became a very worthy disciple. In fact, he was so worthy that when he was exiled, after he survived being in a pot of boiling oil, and they didn't know what to do with him because they couldn't kill him, so they exiled him to Patmos, an island. And after Jesus ascended, he came back and met with John on the island of Patmos to help him write the book of Revelation. Jesus saw the perfect man whenever there was someone that needed to be healed. Period. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. He decided he was going to think correctly about them, as it states in Genesis 1. He was going to let the consciousness of God be his consciousness. He was going to recognize verse 27, where it says, "And so God made man in his image and after his likeness." That's the only man that Jesus saw. That was his choice. We have the same choice. Mary Baker Eddy tells us how important it is to have a model that we can refer to anytime there is a temptation of evil about anyone, anything, any event, anytime, anywhere, under any circumstance. We have the ability to jump our thought from matter to spirit. We can instantly change our thought. And believe me, it's a lot easier to prevent the thought from ever entering than it is to let it enter and try to clean it out. It's like dropping an egg on the floor. You know, you're trying to carry too many things, and you're coming from the refrigerator over to your working table area, and you're holding one too many eggs, and it drops on the floor. Wow. If you would have made 2 trips, I would have been a lot faster than 1 trip and then spending whatever time it takes to clean it up. And what a mess that is. I know, I've done it. It's no fun. No fun at all. That's our choice. Every moment of our life, we have a choice. What are we going to do with the moment? Are we going to be intelligent in how we're doing things? Are we going to do things in a safe, intelligent manner? Boy Scouts teaches you, if you're cutting with a knife, always point the sharp edge away from you. It's not intelligent to do it in a hazardous way. Everything in our life, we have a choice. Are we going to do it the intelligent or the stupid way? The ignorant way, as if we don't know the difference between a sharp edge or the backside of a knife. Assuming it's not a two-edge. There's a few of those around. A sword cuts both ways. It can separate truth from error, and it could do nothing but create a hazard. Do we want to miss the truth by looking through the lens of matter? Here is how Noah Webster defines mist. M-I-S-T. It comes from the word macero, to mix. Water falling in very numerous, but fine and almost imperceptible drops. That which dims or darkens and obscures or intercepts vision. An example, his passion cast a mist before his sense. Passion. Do we want to work on passion? A materialistic term? An emotional term? It says the cloud to cover with vapor. It just came to me yesterday when I was reciting in a prayer treatment about Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, about verse 6 in Genesis 2 saying there went up a mist. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, now what does mist mean? And I just broke it up myself and I said, well, it means missing the truth. Because you're not looking through a clear lens. I've been in a fog that was so thick that you couldn't see your hand if you held it an inch away from your nose. Not often, but I've been in that kind of a fog more than once. We have a choice to do with our moments. What are we going to do with it? Mary Baker Eddy says, one of the most important things that affects whether one is successful or a failure at any given activity or project is what they do with their moments. A moment is defined as the shortest amount of time. You might have one moment that is long, another moment that is short. And your moments may be totally different than someone standing right next to you. There's one thing for sure. We have the freedom with our thought to do anything we desire. Are we going to be constructive? Are we going to be devoting it like Jesus did? Oh, by the way, what was that most important thing that he and Mary Baker Eddy did? They were both attacked all the time by the people they chose. Jesus chose his disciples, and Mary Baker Eddy chose the people that were going to be running the church, her board of directors, all the key people. And she wrote a manual for the church that said how they were supposed to operate. And guess what she put in there about her authority? You'll never guess. I'll bet you if you talk to 1,000 Christian Scientists, there wouldn't be one single one, there may not be one single one that has not read it many times, and they totally didn't give it a thought as to what it was saying. It gave her the exclusive, and she wrote it, remember? although she says that everything she wrote was a divine providence, so God wrote it. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt. She says she was not the author of Science and Health. She says she was a scribe unto the orders of God about all of her books. And if you think about the timeless nature of them, if you really study them, it's not hard to agree. So what does she say in the manual? The thing that is supposed to be what controls how the mother church, the one church in Boston, operates. It gave her exclusive authority on almost every operation of the church. And it said it requires her written approval. Now, what do you think that means after December 10 when she passed on? It means that that is going to be the end of the church. The church is going to self-expire because they had no authority to do anything. She had a household living with her, which were her hand-selected students that were the most spiritual. I mean, out of the millions of people, she hand-selected them. And after they were with her and earned it, she gave them the title of CSD, Doctorate of Christian Science, because they had learned how to heal any problem that came up. They could control the weather, electricity, anything. Anything. And the same with her last class in 1898, 12 years before she left in the Metaphysical College. She hand-selected every single student. And they were advanced enough after the third day that she assigned each one of them to go out and perform a healing. Every single one came back the next morning and reported success. And that was only the beginning of the class. So they were all awarded CSD. Because that's what the class was. It's for the very, very best, and they were at the highest level that they could be at their present level of understanding. Of course, God is infinite. Learning about God is an infinite task because there's no end to it. But as we continue to strive and get a better and better understanding, we get a better mastery of our own individual experience. So we know she had tremendous discipline. And how about Jesus? Did he ever waver? Once he started his ministry, he was there. He had arrived. But he had to learn. He had to learn how to deal with humans. You know, he had dealt with them as a carpenter and going through childhood and so forth, but not in healing. His healing started after, at least I believe the record, starts after his 40 days in the desert, when he had his three temptations from the belief of a devil. He knew the scriptures very well by that time. Every time the devil tried to suggests a temptation, he would reply with a quote from the Bible. For example, the devil tempted him to jump off the top of the roof of the temple. And they built them very high. Could have been several hundred feet. And he said, God will save you. It says in the Bible, God's all powerful. And his rebuttal was, the Bible says, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Now, I know they have self-driving cars, but let's assume you're not in a self-driving car and you're supposed to be having your hand on the wheel and driving it and having the brake and so forth very handy and whatever. Turn signals, horn, whole works. Windshield wiper, if you get into a mist, get into much of a mist, you better be getting off and parking your car. Okay, one you can't see through. So what is it? What was special? Because we know they both made a lot of mistakes. Mary Baker Eddy made a mistake with apparently everyone she appointed. No one came when she passed on. Jesus had half a dozen. So he was a total failure. Almost total. What was the one thing that they did, no matter what they had to experience in the way of attacks from the people that they appointed and thought they could trust? The one thing that both of them were absolutely perseverant, tenacious, didn't give one inch on, one centimeter, one millimeter, one gram, 1 ounce. The seventh synonymous term for God out of Genesis chapter 1. It's in the first definition on page 465, recapitulation. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth. And what's number 7? L-O-V-E. It didn't matter who attacked them. For whatever reason they conjured up, didn't matter. They loved. Mary Baker Eddy left a written record that she loved, that she examined her thought every hour of the day, every day, to make sure that she was not letting a single moment be devoted to anything but love. Didn't matter what she was being attacked for. They were obviously all lies, but that's not the point. She was able to tenaciously and perseverantly stick to love as the response. And Jesus did the same thing. Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith, Frederick L. Rassen, same thing. That's why Goldsmith and Wentworth Winslow and Rassen could have 15-minute appointments in their practice. 15 minutes. Imagine a doctor confined his appointments to 15 minutes. And by the end of 15 minutes, his patient had to be healed. Not given medication, or not given an appointment for an operation, not for anything. No recovery period, nothing. It was just done and over with. That's how they operated. That's how Christian Science functions. Christian Science doesn't function with a recovery period, with an operation, with a drug, with a witch doctor. That's what they had back in the days of Jesus. He never recommended a witch doctor. He never recommended drugs. He never succumbed to a recovery period. I think you're going to have to look long and hard to find any religion that is based on science, except this one. And how do I know? How do you know? How can you find out? How can you be convinced? Well, how you can be convinced is up to you. But the facts are there. 101 pages in chapter 18 of the textbook. Pages 600 to 700 inclusive. 486 verified testimonies by 85 different people. And they've been a record for over 100 years in the textbook. In fact, longer than that. I don't know what year that the final one was put in there, but I know the final authorized edition was 1910. So if you study anything that is after 1910, or anything that has her picture removed, or anything that is copyrighted, then you're not studying anything that's authentic. She purposely left hers uncopyrighted, left her picture in the front of it, and that was it. That was her final edition. Edition number 432. We have it on our website. That's what we use as our reference. Because they changed things. They changed things. Took her picture out. Rearranged some things in it. Anyway, there are people that have written books to show every single change they made. Nobody had the wisdom to make any changes. Love. Everyone has to begin and end with love. In the How to Heal Everything, the very first thing you have to do is examine your life. What do you think about all day long? If you're like almost everyone in existence, there's one person you think about all the time. It has two letters in it and it starts with an M. And it ends with an E. And you see it in the mirror. What do you see in the mirror? Isn't your entire life almost completely about you? What do you make in contributions a year for any kind of a worthy cause? And we warn you about giving money to an institution that claims to be a non-profit that is benefiting children, because that's their favorite thing, to get your heart to just want to bleed. UNICEF is the latest big one that's advertising. UNICEF. They're by the United Nations. They steal all the money. The wealthiest man in the world has teamed up with the President of the United States. Everybody knows their names. I don't want to personalize it, so I will leave their names off. You know who they are. Everyone knows the wealthiest man in the world. He's so much further ahead of everybody else that there's not even any contest. By far, a multiple of the number two guy in wealth. And his wealth just keeps going up. His last salary arrangement was $1 trillion a year. Everyone knows who he is. He teamed up with the president, almost said his name, of the United States. Everyone knows who he is. And they formed an agency for the U.S. government called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. What do you think that what that agency did? On the day of the inauguration, in January of 2025, you know what, 14 months ago, approximately, 13 plus, or no, I guess maybe just under 13. Anyway, that's when the DOGE team went to work. And I mean, he started with a team. He had this all, you know, he had this all worked out in advance, so they were ready to attack. And they started working at 2 o'clock the next morning. And they already had things probably pre-programmed before that. But they went into official action at 2 o'clock in the morning on the day after the inauguration. I don't know what day it was. They're normally around the 20th. But anyway, they tried to get the people that were in charge of making the disbursements for the government to give them access to the computer system. And obviously, they had zero cooperation, even though the president was the number one man and had the authority. No, sorry, you can't have access to this because the whole government is corrupt. If you find one honest person, you've done multi-year work to find it. So what did they do? He has the smartest programmers in the world working for him. I mean, the top, the cream. So he brought him over to the government, working on this team. They cracked into the federal disbursement system in minutes. They didn't need a password. They hacked it. Immediately, they discovered that USAID, and you know what that means, aid, it's supposed to be the U.S. aid to everybody in the world. But what happens to the money? It goes to all the congressmen, all the lobbyists, all the executive staff that is involved in the whole corrupt system. Nothing gets down to people that are in need. Nothing. They did a special project on analyzing, you know, they did an analysis on all the major nonprofit organizations. All of them. How much do you think on the average got down to the people that they were soliciting for? And in most cases, it was children. Or it could be adults, but the children are the big target, because that's what gets everyone's heart to open. Out of 100%, what percentage gets down to what they advertise as the beneficiary of every single dollar you put in? What percentage? Many, he said, got zero. And the highest percentage that was ever filtered down for the purpose of what they were advertising was 5%. So, the Mary Baker Eddy Institute recommends to never give to any major organization. Only give to anyone that you know and can monitor what's going on. I don't care how much money you have. You could be number two to the wealthiest man and decide, okay, I'm going to give 10%. I don't know what you have. Maybe you got $200 billion. Okay, I'm going to give $20 billion to UNICEF. Very stupid move. Very stupid move. Back around 1900, Andrew Carnegie was deemed to be one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest man on planet Earth. He had worked hard all of his life. He emigrated here, I think, from Ireland. He built a steel business, and he had a joint venture with Pullman, who built railroad cars. And I believe he provided all the tracks. This is Carnegie. All the steel tracks for all the railroads. And he came to the point that he said, okay, I'm going to sell out. Or maybe people approached him. I think that's the way it was. And it took him quite a while to figure out what he was going to charge for it. And I think he said he doubled what he thought it was worth. Because he wasn't really eager to sell. I mean, he built it up from scratch. They accepted his offer. They being a Wall Street investment group. They weren't investing anything. They were selling it to the stock people. People that wanted shares in the stock. And they, believe me, they took their cut. The people that put it together. So the money was no object because it was divided between so many people that, you know, whether they paid, you know, $200 million or $400 million didn't matter. I think it was $350 million the offer was, and that's what he sold it for. So what did he do with the money? He decided that he was going to give it away. Do you think he wrote a check? Not a chance. He was actively involved in going around, especially the eastern portion of the U.S. and the country he came from. I believe it was Ireland. And he built universities, libraries, public building, concert halls. In fact, Carnegie Hall. Carnegie Hall. I mean, the most famous place to perform in the world. He stayed there and supervised and contracted for and got the finished product. And then he gave it, the finished product, away to the city or the county or the state or to a university or whoever it was. Nobody could do any cheating. Nobody could do any pilfering. Nobody could do any money laundering. 100% got to the people that he intended it to get to, which was basically the public. The only thing he did that he could have improved on, and this is not to criticize him, but it's just to tell you one element that is very important when you give, and that is to forget ego. He wanted his name on everything. So Carnegie Hall has Carnegie. There's an Andrew Carnegie University, I believe, still in existence on the East Coast. He put his name on everything. And he knew how important name was, because when he made the deal with Pullman, Pullman was reluctant to do a joint venture with him. And so Pullman had one question: what will the name of the company be? And Andrew Carnegie knew right then what was the important thing to Mr. Pullman. It was his name. So he said, well, of course, it'll be the Pullman Coach Company. With that, the Pullman signed the deal. And as a result, he built all the steel that was going to be used. You know, the Carnegie did. Carnegie Steel. So that's the only thing that we need to be careful about. If we're going to give, do everything possible to keep it on the QT. Because if you're going to brag about you gave this and that and whatever, that negates part of the value of what you did. So try to do it anonymously. And the more well-known you are, the more difficult it is to do, but you can still be very judicious. Certainly you could leave your name off of the building, so after it went through one or two or three generations, people wouldn't know who was connected with it. In fact, you could make it a provision that there couldn't be any record about where the money came from in the records of the whoever the beneficiary was, whether it was a university or whatever it was, a library. Or you could have a trust, and you could have a corporation that is the trustee of the trust. And there's ways to structure it. So you can be eliminating most of the identity, if not all of it. So the very first step, if you want to be able to heal, is to convert a life of forgetting about who you see in the mirror and think about other people. Most everyone gives nothing for the benefit of others. Nothing. Zero. Even the Bible says we should give 10%. Mary Baker Eddy Institute says you better be very careful how you give it, who you give it, and for what purpose you give it. And it's better to make sure you give it directly to the people that are going to benefit. And if at all possible, don't even give them money, but you use the money to buy what they need and give them what they need. Then you're eliminating the temptation to abuse your generosity. It is human nature, sadly so, to want to steal out of envy or jealousy of someone who has been successful. Cheat on one way or another. I know of a case where a fellow was begging for food, and he was given not only enough money to take care of his present need, but a job. And he was entrusted with enough to do some substantial shopping. He was supposed to come back in 2 or 3 hours. He never came back. He stole the money. They figured the guy lived in a nice home. He had plenty of money. He willingly gave me a donation. And then he foolishly trusted me with all this money to go shopping. And he was supposed to buy some substantial things. He just took off with the money. When you have nothing and are desperate, you're looking for survival. And honesty, integrity, has nothing to do with nothing. That's why Mary Baker Eddy entitled her book, chapter number 5, to Animal Magnetism. Animals act on instinct. Are we going to be attracted to act on instinct that is based on the need, which totally ignores integrity? Mary Baker Eddy had to remind herself every hour not to be hating anyone, regardless of what they were doing to her, regardless of how they were attacking her. She disciplined herself to remind herself every hour. If somebody as spiritual as she had to do it, how often do you think you and I should do it? I've been in Christian Science my whole life. Our whole family has. I didn't even know what a profane word was until I was probably 20 years old. Never heard it. I didn't become close friends in college with anyone because I was married and we were busy. So I didn't really fool around with other people. And I didn't really hear anything serious until I was drafted in the military. And then, because I had an education, college degree, and had good grades, I was able to go into pilot training. But I had no experience in the military. So you start with boot camp. I think it was 12 weeks. And boy, you talk about profanity. Words I'd never heard of before. Had no idea what they were supposed to mean. We have all these temptations, no matter what our upbringing was, if we're out in the world at all. And we have to guard our thought. We have to guard our thought all the time. Remember what Shakespeare said? That brings me to the third quote at the beginning of the textbook. And it's by Mary Baker Eddy. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. Do you think God has a set of ears? Nope. Says God is incorporeal. No ears. He has hearing, but no material ears, no material eyes, nothing made of matter. It seems to me what she is telling the world that reads that quote is that she is blessed because she has aligned herself with the laws of the universe, which are the laws of God, which are the laws of truth, the laws of spirit, divine mind and soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And she was living that, regardless of all the attacks upon her. And she discovered that when she lived those laws, that she was blessed. And that God was omnipresent, thou here and everywhere. God is omnipresent. So those laws are effective no matter where you are. Geographically or mentally, they're available. Physically, doesn't matter. They are there. They're portable. They are with us all the time. Are we going to open our thought and let them be revealed to us? As a matter of fact, that's really what Genesis 1 is all about. It's not about creation. Nothing new has ever been created. Frederick L. Rawson who was a great scientist of electricity. People came to him from all over the world to solve their electrical problems. Big companies had money to hire anybody, but they couldn't solve their problems, so they came to him. And back in those days, and this was 125 years ago, they might have to travel a month to get to where he was. He was living in the UK. They could be halfway around the world and have to travel 30 days to get to where he was. Another 30 days to get home, and he may solve it in 1 or 2 days, 1 or 2 hours. But that's what it took. So what does he say about inventing? He says it's a rearrangement of how truth is presented. In other words, the truth is already known. You know, think about mathematics. It's just applied in a different way. Even the laws of physics, just applied in a different way. Quantum mechanics, which came about around 1900, the discovery from that was that there is no matter. That when they kept breaking down the atom, they realized that it was energy. It wasn't something opaque, it was energy. There was nothing left. And it depended upon the observers. There was a research project done on sound. And they set up a series of cameras in the woods. And they wondered if sound is dependent, and this was taking the project of quantum mechanics, quantum physics, two different names for the same thing. They were taking it another step, and they say, well, if that's the case, if the observers are the ones that determine what is being observed, then how about if there's no observers there? Does it really happen? I mean, you know, we had some clever thinkers, and I've got to apologize because somehow, I mean, I had a record of all this stuff, and due to the progress of technology over the years and not being consistency in data because they changed the format of data. I mean, the format of the first spreadsheets that were written, it was in the format of SuperCalc, and you can't even decipher it now. So I've got some archives of hard drives that have this information on it because I found out about it several decades ago. And so what they did, you're just going to have to believe me or whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter to me. I know it's true because I read it and it made sense to me. And I linked it to what they've discovered about quantum mechanics and about splitting the atom and all this kind of thing. And of course, that's what Christian Science teaches. That's what Shakespeare teaches. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. The very same thing can be applied to substance. The observers, what are they observing? That's what the substance is. Another famous physicist said that what ye be is what you see. And another one, a more passive view, is what you see is what you be. That's believing what you see to be truth, and so you automatically adopt it. Frederick L. Rawson, he was probably the greatest genius of all. He figured out how to heal back in time. And he said, of what I told you about inventions and truth, and he also made the statement that life is already predetermined and it's a film. You know, like the old-fashioned films that were on the big reels. And he said, where are you in the film? He did go back in time on 500 different cases. Once he discovered how to do it, he utilized that apparently on every case. And with 15-minute appointments, it doesn't take long to go through 500 cases. He also realized how important it was to give. Well, anyone that was really a successful instantaneous healer has to know this. But he's the one that said it. He said, we're on this planet for one purpose, to make other people happy. Is that giving or taking? Make other people happy. Isn't that what the golden rule is? The golden rule is Christian Science being lived. Mary Baker Eddy's life was full of giving, regardless of what attacks she received. She gave, gave, gave. Jesus did the same thing. Frederick L. Rowson, the same thing. Wentworth Winslow. Joel Goldsmith. Money was not important to those people. The idea was what was important, to make humanity better off because they were doing their work was what was important. Wentworth Winslow made the public statement that he had been in the practice 35 years. And we know Joel Goldsmith started at a young age and he was in it all of his life. Frederick L. Rowson learned about Christian Science because he was employed by a newspaper that contracted with him as an assignment to find out if there was any validity to these people coming from Boston, Massachusetts, were able to heal. He was an avid student of the Bible. They knew that. He was a very advanced scientific man because they knew people came from all over the world to solve their electrical problems. They knew that. And so they asked him if he would be interested in researching it. And obviously he was, because of what I told you his background was. Very scientific in nature, so they knew they could depend on his answer, and he was very interested in researching the Bible. He was an avid Bible student. So he knew the Bible had something special in it. So he was all ready for Christian Science. So he did his research, and he found, well, the result is he became... he became one of the most expert, experienced practitioners that planet Earth had ever known, next to Mary Baker Eddy and Christ Jesus. So a rearrangement of the truth. In other words, it's like applying mathematics to this particular problem. The principle doesn't change, but it just hasn't been applied to this. For example, self-driving cars. I mean, this gentleman, who's, in my view, is a total genius. And what is a genius? What is a genius? We take the view, we being the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, that a genius is anyone who decides on a worthwhile project that is going to benefit mankind, like the motto of the Christian Science Monitor that Mary Baker Eddy put on there as a motto when she founded it back in, I don't know, 1906 or 7 or 8. It's to bless all mankind and injure none. That's what the wealthiest man in the world has as his goal in all of his projects. That's why he's been so successful. He probably has never heard of Christian Science. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out a way to make contact with him. But his projects have all been for the benefit of humanity. He is trying to overcome time and space. We use his service, the Starlink. It's the only one that never fails. We always had two services. There's only two companies that provide a service where I'm located. And I have everything back up. I had two telephone services, two internet services. I used to have a generator to back up the electricity. But I haven't needed that, so I don't. I sold it. Now I don't have to have two of anything. Love. You have to cultivate your understanding of what the most successful people did that advanced their spiritual understanding. and you will find that they were cultivating and transforming their lives from taking, thinking about themselves, to thinking about everyone else. Do a self-analysis. You will be surprised that you're thinking about yourself almost everything you do. If you ever get in an argument with someone about anything, who are you thinking about? Are you interested in what the other person's view is and why? If so, you don't have time to argue. You're trying to learn. How many people try to learn when they have a difference of opinion? Few and far between. How about if somebody cuts in front of you when you're driving out on the highway? Or even in town? Do you have a bad taste in your mouth about them? Or are you putting forth love, saying you hope that they're in a hurry for a very good reason and you hope that the problem gets solved? And you do whatever you can to accommodate them. Put on your brake, move to another lane to make it easier for them, whatever. How do you conduct yourself? When you're checking out at the store, grocery store, department store, whatever, do you ever think about the clerk? Do you think about how routine her work is? All day long, she's standing on her feet, and she's going to be getting frowns mixed in with the ones that care enough about her or him to smile. It's common for people to take out their problems on everybody they're in contact with, instead of concealing it, which is their real business to do. Their real business is to be a beacon of light, not a beacon of disgruntlement. To be happy, not sad. To be pleasant. To smile, not frown. Have you ever looked at yourself in the mirror and frown and then convert it to a smile? What would you rather see? If you're walking down the street, a smile or a frown? What are you projecting? Are you projecting a smile or a frown? When it says we should tithe, I take that to mean that it's across the board with everything in our life. The facial expressions. Are we giving at least 10% of it to be really beautiful? We should be giving 100%. How about our time? Every 24 hours, there's 1,440 minutes. 10% is only 144. 2 hours and 24 minutes. Richard Strain was at the end of his rope, and I mention his name only because he's an author, and you may be interested in reading this or listening to his tape, his tapes. He was at the bottom of his bottom of the rope, end of his being able to think coherently about it. It was such a problem. He was away from home 18 hours a day, home only 6, and by the time you would eat, clean up, rest, get up the next day and prepare for going out and eating and so forth, you probably only had maybe 4 hours of sleep. He felt like he was going around in a circle, getting nowhere. He went to a Christian Science practitioner that he thought he was could trust, that she had an excellent reputation for success. He told her his story. She had one thing to say. How much do you study? 5 words. That was it. I don't know, he probably could have spent 5 minutes telling her his woes. She had 5 words to say. He was shocked. He was silent. He thought, boy, she got right to the crux of it right now. Because he doesn't study any. None. Nada. Zip. After he confessed that, She said, if you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to work out of your problem. 5 hours. That's 300 minutes. 300 minutes out of 1,440. A little over 20%. He's got to jack it up from zero to a little over 20%. He sat there saying nothing. Apparently trying to figure out how in the world would he do it. She didn't say another word. I guess she's waiting on him to say, well, thank you anyway, goodbye. Or, how much do I owe you? Can't I just pay you to solve this problem for me? She planted the seed, and it was up to let him germinate it or kill it. He doesn't say how long he waited before he said anything, but he finally said, okay, I'm going to do it. He didn't say he was going to think about it. He didn't say he was too busy to consider it right now, but he'll think about it next weekend. He said, I'm going to do it. He realized that he had no other alternative because he was a Christian Scientist. He wasn't going to be going to some shrink or take drugs or whatever. He figured that that's his only alternative. So he decided to do it. He didn't know how, probably. I haven't listened to the tape for a long time, but I don't know what the thoughts were going through, and as I recall, he doesn't say much about that. But he does say by the end of 1 week that there was so much progress that the 5 hours a day he was studying was not a problem. The first day it was probably a total problem because he had no sleep. And maybe the second day he didn't have any sleep. But by the end of 7 days, he's indicating that, number one, he was down to working only 12 hours at work. So that gave him 6 hours. And the progress at work was advancing instead of in a stalemate. He didn't feel like he was going around in a rut anymore. Just in a circle and getting nowhere. What are you willing to give of your life to convert it from whatever it is now to a whole new dimension where you can learn how to heal anything that you're faced with and you can help others, for example, your family, if you're married, have children, or close friends that are having problems? I found that most people, if you ask them how they're doing, most people are very willing to talk about their problems. That means that that is occupying their thought. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Do we want to make our thinking occupied with the garbage? Or do we want to occupy it with the facts about God? The facts about infinity? The facts about nothing is impossible to God. In fact, that's one of the short phrases that Frederick L. Rawson uses in his Overcoming Time. There is nothing impossible to God. That's where he begins. We're not talking about ourselves. We're talking about what we get as our source that we can reflect. If we start off with that kind of a big picture, that nothing is impossible, and of course we're thinking about wholesome things, we're not talking about whether or not we can rob a bank or kill somebody or some stupid thing that is a total violation of the Ten Commandments, let alone the Golden Rule. We're thinking about moving forward in progress. Then we can honestly say, because it states it in the Bible, or we can not believe the Bible, whatever you want to do. Your salvation is not for me to work out, or for the Mary Baker Eddy Institute to work out. Your salvation is for you to work out. As a matter of fact, anyone that goes to a practitioner and there's a healing, If you leave it at that point, that is very foolish. Mary Baker Eddy says, you will find that there will be other problems that crop up in other parts of your life. That should be a wake-up call so you decide, wow, look what's possible. I want to get involved. And so you start studying. How much is your life worth? Is it worth donating 20% of your time? 5 hours a day? Probably everyone can figure out that there are minutes, if not hours, a day that are unproductive. Whatever it is, you can probably figure that out. One of the greatest salesmen, you've probably all heard of him. His first and last name starts with a Z. Or at least the first name, that probably was a nickname. Zig Ziglar. I'll just tell you. He was very successful professional salesman, training other people. I've never taken a course in salesmanship, but I have listened to what he's had to say, and a lot of good constructive things there that applies to anything, not just sales. And he said, imagine that I told you, you know, let's say this was like a Wednesday or Thursday, and I told you that you would have an all-expense round trip paid, first class, and it begins on Saturday morning. And you have to be at such and such a place by Saturday morning. And if you're there, you will get a round trip, first class, vacation for 2 weeks, paid by me. Would you be there? So they're all thinking, gee, what am I supposed to be doing today, tomorrow, before Saturday morning? And he said that I can guarantee you, you're going to rearrange your schedule and your priorities. You want to be there. You want to get that round trip, all expense paid, first class vacation for 2 weeks. And you'll figure out how to do it. Well, that's what Mr. Strain did. He figured out how to do it. That's what we need to do with our schedule. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute recommends that you become an expert in time management, goal management, priority management, reading, listening, computer skills, or maybe cell phone skills, I don't know. Cell phone to me is an extremely limited thing. I mean, I use these huge screens. I have three of them turned on right now. Well, two, which I'm using while I do this. I used to have 55-inch. Now I use 70, 75. A cell phone, I have one. I use it only as a total last resort. I take it with me because it's an easy way to know what time it is if I leave and go do any kind of an errand. But to go on the internet with it, forget it. So can you rearrange your schedule if you all of a sudden get an incentive to change your priorities? If you think you could improve your life by 100% or 200 or 300%, would you devote 20% of your time in a very serious effort to make it happen? Most people give nothing away. They think about only themselves, and as a result, they have conflict after conflict. Why? Because everyone else is doing the same thing. Everyone is centered around themselves. That is one of the, you talk about a sin or a disease, that is the most common sin and disease on planet Earth. The total loss of the golden rule, the total loss of giving, the total loss about thinking about the welfare of others. And believe me, you're not going to get the first base if you don't convert the word me to them. Everyone. You see someone rob a bank. You can do a treatment right then about in your own consciousness that supply is not limited. And there is no truth in dishonesty. Man cannot be dishonest because it doesn't come from God, the only one that is the source of man. I read a testimony, I don't know, a few years ago, about a couple. I don't recall that it mentioned they had any children or not, but a couple, they were both Christian Scientists. And a thief came and knocked on the door, and they opened it, and he pushed his way in, and he had a gun. He went through the house, and he picked up everything he could carry that was the most valuable, and then he left. All the time he was there, they were thinking about the kind of thinking that Jesus would do. This is an opportunity to glorify God. No, that man didn't sin, nor his parents. Yeah, he's suffering from a disease. The disease that he has a lack. And he thinks he has to steal from people to just, you know, take care of what his survival needs are. But they don't think about that. They don't condemn him. By the way, why would you ever forgive anyone? Should you ever forgive anyone? How about playing the game of prevention instead of cure? If you don't condemn anyone, are you going to need to forgive anyone? Because if you forgive somebody, the only thing you can do is go back and trace, how in the world am I thinking of me being a judge anyway? Am I judging someone? Am I God? God doesn't judge anyone anyway. God has laws, and if you break them, you break yourself against the laws. God didn't know anything about evil. How could he know anything about evil? He knows only perfection. He knows only good. If we want to break ourselves against his laws, that's up to us. We're the ones that suffer. Sooner or later, we're going to suffer. So they did not condemn him. They did not judge him. They were focusing on who man is in accordance with Genesis chapter 1. Yes, they let the consciousness of God into their thoughts. They thought of him as a model. There's only one man, and that is the spiritual man that is the reflection of God. On page 591, the definition man says that he is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. That's from memory, so maybe I have one word wrong. If so, sorry. Think about that. Compound idea of infinite spirit. In other words, not matter. Not mortal mind, not someone that is diseased, not someone that is out of what they need in food, shelter, and clothing, not a thief. Forget about the human thought. Think about the real spiritual man. You have to go over the bridge and get your foot off of the dirt and out of the mud and just get over to the right line of thinking about everyone. Everyone. The President of the United States is been criticized from beginning to end. Is that any help to criticize someone? There's an article by Dr. Francis Fluno, F-L-U-N-O, on our website. He wrote a page and a half article on criticism. It's on our home page. Take a look at it. If you take that to heart, you will never want to criticize anyone ever, forever. In fact, here is the most important sentence in the whole thing. It says, criticism leads to all evil. Not that it's a disadvantage. It leads to all evil. All. Every evil comes from criticizing someone else or something else. Everyone. Every evil stems from criticism. Why? Because Genesis 1 says what everyone is, the true spiritual nature of everyone. So we're criticizing God. That's why it leads to all evil. If we're going to criticize God, there's no way out. Think of criticizing God when you criticize man, the visible. If you criticize the visible, you're criticizing the invisible, who is the source of the visible. The visible is only a symbol. Are we looking at the material symbol or the spiritual symbol? It's our choice. Think of Shakespeare. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Which one do we want to choose? The spiritual or the material? It's up to us. It's up to us. So what happened to the man that walked out with all their goodies? They kept on thinking the same way after he left as while he was there. Everyone has what they need. Everyone is honest. There is no dishonest man. Every man is made in the image and likeness of God. Not a sinning mortal man. Not a thief or anything else. Everyone is a spiritual image and likeness of God. A full expression of mind. Compound idea of spirit, not matter. Not a thief. They kept on thinking that way. Pretty soon there was a knock on the door. Who do you think it was? It was the spiritual idea of God. The same one that picked up all the things and walked out. He didn't change. Their view about him did not change. His view about himself changed. He viewed himself as someone in a desperate need. And he no longer viewed himself that way. His consciousness was transformed by the way others thought about him. It has been said that a student rises to the expectation of the teacher, and when the teacher is ready, the student appears. They were ready. They were tenacious, perseverant. The truth always wins. Always. It may be a different timing or in a different way than what we're expecting, but it always wins. And if it hasn't won in the way that we are thinking it should have, then we got to go back to the drawing board and examine what is wrong in our approach, our thinking, our understanding, and rebuild our blueprint. The wealthiest man in the world probably knows all about that. Nobody can accomplish what he's accomplished without going through some very serious research and development. So he comes in the door. They open the door. When he knocks on the door, they weren't surprised to see him. They didn't say anything about him making mistakes in his life. He said, I have no idea what came over me. What I did was absolutely wrong. And I hope you will forgive me. They didn't have to. They'd never condemned him. He said, I hope you will forgive me. And then he graciously left. What are we letting in our consciousness? Are we letting the physical appearance of what seems to be going wrong be a part of us? It was mentioned earlier in this recording that it is much easier to prevent than it is to cure. They prevented. They prevented. They never let the thought into their consciousness that somebody was making a huge mistake. That wasn't the person they were seeing. They were seeing God's innocent child of God. They were seeing an innocent child of God. And as a result, he came forth with his innocence in a visible fashion. Are we looking through a mist? If we are, we're missing the truth. There's only one truth. What does Habakkuk say? God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. And Jesus said, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Shakespeare gives us a heads up, an alert, to say, well, it's up to you on how you think. How are you going to think? You know, that was several hundred years before Mary Baker Eddy came on the scene. I will mention one thing. If you're not familiar with what happened at 325 AD, I highly recommend you read a book on our website by Robert C. Putnam. He's one of the finest Bible scholars you'll ever find, next to Mary Baker Eddy and some of these other ones, such as Frederick L. Rawson and Joel Goldsmith and Wentworth Winslow. Anyone who has 15-minute appointments and the healing is done in 15 minutes, they know the truth in the Bible. So they're all Bible scholars. But he actually wrote a book, 169 pages long, 10 Bible lessons, and you will find that very useful. He covers every major character in the Bible and every major event. And that 169 pages is basically an index and a summary with diagrams and so forth. And so to really study the book, you have to study several hundred pages in the Bible, because that's supporting the summary and the index that he's giving you. He taught Sunday school 35 years. His doctorate is from chemistry. So he's very used to a very systematic, structured method of research. And he utilized that in going through the Bible from A to Z. Excellent book. So he wrote this other book on the Council of Nicaea, which happened at 325 AD. Every serious student that wants to heal should read that book. It's not long. I don't know. A couple hundred pages, probably. But that explains why we went into the Dark Ages. Why Christianity that Jesus gave to the world fell through the cracks. Until 1,500 years later that Mary Baker Eddy went down underneath the floorboard and brought out the most important part of Christianity, and that is healing. Everyone else ignored it. Everyone else. They flirted around with it, like New Age thinking and all this kind of stuff. But she is the one that brought back healing to Christianity. And to this day, not another church has wised up about it. It seems like they're all interested in making money and appeasing somebody that has been sinned or that has sinned. And this is all a carryover from what happened at that Council of Nicaea. And I don't want to bring up any more details about it, because this is already like, I don't know what, 2 hours long or something. So, which is like the extremity of the length of any of them. So, I don't want to go into details, but I highly recommend it. The website is full of treasures. Treasures. We have sources that you cannot find anywhere else. We have authors that people have never even heard of anywhere else. If you haven't studied the lost books of the Bible, some very, very good things in there. We need to be grateful that Genesis 1 is the true record of man and God, instead of it being tucked in the middle or at the end somewhere. Mary Baker Eddy begins the textbook with a chapter on prayer. You talk to 1,000 people that claim to be Christians and they don't have the foggiest idea how to pray. You pray like you should do everything else in your life. Be scientific, systematic, and consistent. Not an emotional thing. Not trying to plead to God for something. God doesn't have any ears. God is incorporeal. Everything we need is already a law of the universe. We need to learn what they are, and we need to understand the value of following them. And as Isaiah says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And Mary Baker Eddy emphasizes that we do not expect to get from, you know, where we are to infinity in one step. You have to go through a progressive stage for your thought system to adjust to something that you never even had any clue was the truth. Mary Baker Eddy thought all the churches in the world would come flocking to what she discovered and be so grateful. What happened? The resistance to truth is very great. Fibonacci had the same problem. A genius Italian mathematician. He told the government they were going to have big problems pretty soon. He told them when it was going to happen. People either get murdered or incarcerated when they introduce a new idea. And fortunately, Mary Baker Eddy didn't suffer either one. Although the second one mentioned, she had a different view on. Anything you have any question about, you are welcome to contact us. Just click on contact and it takes you to a form and it tells you how to make contact with us. And we don't believe in long emails and all that kind of stuff. We have a very simple way. It takes you about a couple of minutes to set it up. And you will have a totally encrypted private communication one-on-one. And you can ask any question you want about the Bible, anything about Christian Science, anything about divine metaphysics, the system, anything at all. Okay? And we are happy to help people get oriented and to give them some direction. We're not a babysitter. But if you're really serious, I mean, you have to be like Richard Strain. He didn't talk to the person every day, the practitioner, to try to get moral courage. He'd made the decision. And if you're there where you think there's something better than what you're experiencing now in your life, then feel free to contact us and we'll guide you. This has been really about seeing clearly and not having a mist. So the overriding synonymous term more than anything else in this particular prayer treatment is probably seeing the truth by looking through the lens of spirit. So I will recite to you two different special prayers that Mary Baker Eddy gave her most advanced class, the one mentioned in 1898, where they all earned a CSD degree, and she was the only one that was ever given a license to have a college on metaphysics where she could give out degrees clear up to the doctorate level. Never been given to anybody since, and had never been given to anyone previous. And that tells you right there that God had a hand in this. So I'm going to read to you both her special prayer on spirit and on truth. And they're called Diapason of Heaven. And if you look in the Noah Webster Dictionary, you'll find diapason is compound concord. And that's what heaven is. It's not a far off geographical location. It is compound concord within one's own consciousness. And Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, which we teach in these prayer treatments, tells you exactly what to do to bring that about in your life. Here is the prayer, Diapason of Heaven, with a focus on spirit and truth. And if there's any other thought that occurs that is a very short message, after I say amen for those two prayers, I will make a short statement about it and then identify this with the time and the date. And when I say the end, that really is the end, if you're not asleep. Otherwise, the end for you was long ago. But we will be posting this on the website. Everything that is extemporaneous remains that way, totally unedited. So don't look for a polished revision of what you've heard, because what you've heard is exactly what I've said. That's what will be posted on the website, and normally we try to post it the next day, so based on that, it should be up there tomorrow. Okay, here are the two prayers, one on spirit and one on truth, Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, discovered Christian Science in 1866 while reading her Bible after she had been given the prognosis of death from a fall on the ice. Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy with a focus on spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen. Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy with a focus on truth. Truth is a sacred name for God. We must divest it of all materiality. Declare often, truth is my God, and my God is truth. Good is my truth, and my truth is good. Truth is enthroned in my consciousness. Error and materiality are not enthroned. This is the word of God. Amen. There are a couple of thoughts that occurred. One is to use all of the senses and think of them in a spiritual way, no matter what we're doing. What we may miss in seeing, we may perceive in hearing, or in feeling, or even smelling, touching, tasting. We're given five faculties for a reason. Each one is picking up something in a different way. The other thought is, I quoted to you what Frederick L. Rawson said about there's nothing new. And there's a quote in the Bible about that from Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 9. The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. The title to this prayer treatment is 0 to 7, meaning beginning to total fulfillment. Missed is missing the truth. It is Tuesday, February 24, 2026, at 08:57. Thank you for listening. The end.